This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
Welcome to the show. Cover of the Bee this last weekend. Crowds denounce war. From coast to coast, protesters assail possible U.S. military action against Iraq. In many cases, the article describes the largest crowds seen since the Vietnam era.
Well, come on, General, let's move fast. The old big chance has come at last. Gotta go out, get those Reds. The only good commie is one that's dead. And you know that peace can only be won when the golden rule of the kingdom come.
And it's one, two, three, what are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's five, six, seven, open up the pearly gate.
Yes, what are we fighting for? It's a good question. Organizers estimated that 200,000 people attended the event here in San Francisco. The local police set the number at 50,000, which is always a perennial bet of argument over how many actually showed. In San Francisco, Sharon Ponciano of Sacramento attended the rally, quoted in the Bee as saying, "I think there's been no convincing evidence why we should go to war," unquote. And I would have to agree with Sharon on that one. We've asked the question on this show several times. We'll ask it again. Why must we rush off to war against Iraq, a nation that did not attack us on September 11th? Meanwhile, the search for Osama bin Laden goes on. If you're keeping an Osama count, and we hope you are, add 476 days to the number of days in this month. If today's the 23rd, we're now at day 499. Yes, tomorrow marks 500 days in this still unsuccessful search for Osama bin Laden. And yet, we're all preparing for war against Iraq, which perhaps not coincidentally is known to have the world's second largest proven oil fields, which I think has more to do with why we need to go out and seize the reins of government in Iraq than the matter of who's been attacking us lately. Item off the web, MSNBC, America at War. We have its own section now, America at War. January 14th, an attack on Iraq would begin with an intense salvo of airstrikes on leadership targets in and around Baghdad, followed quickly by a ground war in the hopes that the worst of the fighting would be over in 2 to 3 weeks, war planners at the Pentagon have revealed to NBC News. Yes, a war that's over in 2 to 3 weeks. Well, it's possible. George Bush Sr. demonstrated you could have a ground war over in 4 days if you decided to call off going up the highway to Baghdad and taking Saddam out. But those of us old enough to remember the light at the end of the tunnel in the Vietnam era would have a bit of skepticism about this rather rosy forecast about an easy and quick war. For those of you too young to remember, during the Vietnam morass, one of our military bright sparks came back and said, although the end of the war was not imminent, he could see the light at the end of the tunnel. This is about 1968, leaving some wag to remark when the war finally did end with the collapse of the South Vietnamese government 5 years later, that it was time for someone to reach out and turn out the light at the end of the tunnel. There's been some publicity about a division among the Bush administration over what to do. And certain hawks, like Richard Perle, the portly Ronald Reagan-era Assistant Secretary of Defense, who is not a member of the government and yet maintains an office in the Pentagon with close access to Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld. He's been hanging out through the Clinton years at a perch at the American Enterprise Institute for Public Policy Research. And Mr. Perle, an unabashed hawk, is lecturing other members in the government of how we need to pursue this war. He's set to go. Joining him has been another hawk. Elliot Abrams has recently been promoted into the senior ranks of the Bush administration. In case you don't remember, Abrams, he was pardoned by George Bush Sr. as he was slipping out the door in late 1992 before the Clinton administration came in. He was pardoned along with other Iran-Contra figures, like Dewey Claridge, the man who ran the CIA operation versus Nicaragua, the man who led the mining of the harbor that it was necessary to counter the dreaded threat from the Sandinistas, who were liable to march up into Texas by their way of thinking, acting as Soviet proxies. Meanwhile, I would remind you, the USSR was tottering and about to implode, but these hawks were assuring us that they were still powerful, still an adversary, still a direct threat, and that we had to do everything possible to counter them in Central America. These are the same hawkish geniuses now who are telling us what we need to do against Iraq. These are the guys that felt it was necessary to lie to Congress and to the public for our own good. As these guys set about undermining the moderates in the Bush administration, I wonder if they don't have the ideology that was summed up so well by Bob Dylan many years back.
But now we have weapons of chemical dust. And if by them we're forced to, why then by them we must. One push out the button and a shot the world wide. And you never ask questions.
Yes, I do wonder whether some people do feel that, you know, God is on our side. On a happier note, yesterday marked the 30th anniversary of what was a milestone Supreme Court decision, Roe versus Wade. Before this decision went down, there was a patchwork quilt of legislation across this country on the matter of abortion. After this decision, things were quite clear in the law, and they remain so to this day, 30 years later. The formula that was used in Roe versus Wade, we should tell you, was that for the first 12 weeks of a pregnancy, the first trimester, it was ruled the state has no interest in abortions. Abortions must be left relatively unrestricted and up to the medical judgment of the doctor. In the second trimester, between 12 and 24 weeks, the state's interest arises. It was felt, and abortions can be regulated only to protect the woman's health after 24 weeks, at which point the fetus is potentially able to live independent of its mother. At that point, it was felt the state had a vested interest to protect that life. That is pretty much how things have stood. The religious right is adamant that this must be overturned. That was originally a 7-2 decision back in 1973. Interestingly, the current Chief Justice, William Rehnquist, was on the court at that time, and he opposed Roe versus Wade. He now has at least three other solid people behind him, Antonin Scalia, Clarence Thomas, probably Anthony Kennedy, but he's had a hard time finding the fifth. Sandra Day O'Connor, although she went along with the felonious four and the notorious Gore versus Bush decision in the 2000 election, has resisted going along with overturning Roe versus Wade. I would like to point out that many devout Christian fundamentalists and Catholics have adamantly opposed Roe versus Wade on the reasoning that life begins at conception. They're quite certain of this. Although there is really no compelling philosophical reason to endorse this position, and it's interesting that if you look in the Bible, which I have done, and you try and find the strongest wording in the Bible that says that abortion is wrong and must not be practiced, and I'm here to tell you, you ain't going to find it. I mean, like, you know, I know this is going to offend some people out there who are anti-abortion, but the truth is, folks, you cannot find in the Bible any explicit ban on the practice. And I'll be happy to argue with anybody about that because it ain't there. The best you can do is a reference in the Psalms that said something about ye who knit me in the womb. I can't remember the exact Psalm, but the argument is that, well, if you knit me in the womb, you must mean that, you know, life begins at the zygote stage. Sorry, I don't buy it. Another anniversary of note, 100 years ago, last Saturday, a young Italian inventor named Guglielmo Marconi stood on a sandy bluff on Cape Cod and sent a 54-word greeting from President Theodore Roosevelt across the ocean to England's King Edward VII. A few hours later, the king responded. Marconi had thus launched the era of global wireless communication. Well, at the same time, 100 years ago, in Ohio, a couple of bicycle manufacturers, very clever boys named Wilbur and Orville Wright, were working on gliders and engines and propellers to try and make heavier-than-air aircraft a reality. They succeeded by December. And there was an article on, I heard on Capital Public Radio last week about the fact that airlines are now initiating service where you can connect to the internet over the radio on flights across the ocean. I mean, this all goes back to 100 years ago. I mean, where Marconi meets the Wright brothers. It's amazing how far we've come. Now, I understand we have a call coming in from Los Angeles about a third anniversary worthy of commemoration. I'm not sure what it's all about. Let's go now to Los Angeles. David, how are things down in Hollywood?
I've got big news.
Well, shoot.
Well, you know, the recent Martin and Lewis TV flick was a hit, as Buddy Pictures often are.
So I take it you've got a buddy picture type thing going.
I got a great duo. Think 200th anniversary, okay? Famous pair. Here's a hint. 1803.
Aaron Burr shoots Alexander Hamilton.
No, but you are so close.
Byron and Shelley.
No. Come on, I know you can do it.
Napoleon and Wellington.
Lewis and Clark, Doug. William Clark and Meriwether Lewis have never been given adequate treatment on the big screen. It was quite an adventure, you know.
Well, how are you going to sell that one?
I'm thinking road picture, a Western with comedy. Think Dances with Wolves with some F-troop thrown in.
You got some actors for this one?
You betcha. For Lewis and for Clark, and even for old Tommy Jefferson, too. And for comedy hijinks, a funny Indian, Chief Buffalo Chip. He's kind of a composite from the actual Frontier saga.
Oh, my.
You know, it can't be all canoes and journal writing, Doug. Come on. Well, some, you know, pizzazz.
Well, who you got?
Dustin Hoffman for Clark and Christopher Walken for Lewis. Huh?
Interesting. Do you have a clip?
Is Paris a city? Hold on a second. Lewis, listen, if the river goes west, we pass the Continental Divide already. Now we just keep going. It's easy. Clark, I don't know where the divide is, but Jefferson wants to know where, with longitude and latitude and stuff.
I'm telling you, we passed it Tuesday.
So how do we mark the map with the cotton-picking divide?
Lewis, look, it's a line, okay? It covers a lot of places.
What do you mean?
Water rolls downhill, right? So on Tuesday, it didn't roll at all. Get it? So that's the divide. Bingo.
So you think we passed the divide?
I don't think so. I know so.
So now we're on the western slope?
Now you're getting it.
Holy Toledo!
David, is this the general tone of this movie?
Well, you know, come on. We're not trying to be Ken Burns here. You know, this is not documentary, but it's a flick that will serve as a loving tribute to every hero who ever donned buckskin.
So, does that include the village people?
Maybe. Well, look, Doug, listen to this next clip if you want to talk bravery. Clark, there's no way we run these rapids. Look at the height of those waves. We got a portage.
Lewis, it'll take us miles to walk the canoes. It will be at it forever. I say go for it.
I don't know. I can't swim so good, you know?
Come on. We go in. We run 2 miles. Then, I'll tell you what, we'll have some lunch out of the deer leftovers.
It's venison. Venison leftovers, Clark. Not deer.
Okay. Look, we run 2 miles of white water. Then I'll tell you what, I'll make us some nice venison sandwiches. What do you say, Chief Buffalo Chip?
How what?
How you like 'em venison. I say eat 'em now, me plenty hungry.
David!
Yeah, Doug?
You've got to be kidding.
You love it, right?
You can't do this. This is ridiculous.
Well, who says I can't? Where is it written? Okay, maybe we're taking a few artistic liberties, but like I said, if you want Ken Burns, you know, watch PBS. You know, if you want thrilling action-adventure with comedy and romance, see this movie.
Where's the romance?
One word, Doug. Sacagawea. She'll break your heart, totally. I mean, we wanted to get Halle Berry, but she's too high right now. You know, the Oscar.
Hey, don't you still have Charo under contract?
Oh, yeah, good idea. You know, she kind of looks Indian. The Hoochie Coochie could be like a cute tagline.
Who plays Jefferson in this gem?
Oh, Doug, this is what I'm most proud of, Doug. Chuck Heston. Who could be better? He's marvelous. Hold on, listen to this. I want you boys to know that your nation is counting on you to explore this land and teach us what lies on the mighty Missouri. Mr. President, your faith in us will be rewarded. Believe me, we can do this.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We'll keep very good notes. Meticulous. If the country needs to know what lies to the west, we'll do it, sir. No question. We can do it, and we will. Captain Lewis and I will be very careful. You know that. We'll be very careful.
Well, good. Fellas, tell us where the Indian lives. Tell us about the plants you find, the topography, the timber. And if you could, bring me back some of that Pacific Northwest smoked salmon. I'd be much obliged. That stuff is red gold, boys. Red gold. Delicious.
David.
What?
How can you do this?
What are you talking about? Do what?
Trivialize these great explorers.
This picture shows their heroism, Doug. And you know, besides, we have tons of commercial tie-ins for the kids, you know, to revive interest in American history.
I can just see you now hawking coonskin caps, David.
No. Coonskin-like caps, yes. Genuine imitation coonskin. You know, we don't want to irritate the animal rights people. I got enough troubles.
Yes, you do. I'd hate to be in your scalp when this goes down.
We're going to have Lewis and Clark brand buffalo jerky in every 7-Eleven in America. Talk about teaching the youth family values.
Well, now, how can jerky instill family values?
And between you and me, you know, buffalo meat is as stiff as a rawhide doggy toy, you know, but the jaw work needed to chew that stuff will show the young people that not everything comes so easy. You know, good things are worth an effort, you see? And the buffalo industry, you know, they'll probably adopt a breeding program to sustain the public's newfound love for jerky. It's perfect.
Well, what a shot in the arm that'll be for America's buffalo breeders.
And about time, you know, the Great Plains might again see vast herds of majestic bison, Doug, thanks to what we're trying to do here.
It's kind of a Sierra Club dream come true.
I would say so. Yeah, absolutely. You're going to love this movie, Doug. Absolutely. I just can't wait for you to see this.
All right. Well, good luck on that one once again, David. Thanks for coming.
Well, thanks for letting me come on and hawk my stuff.
All right. Well, it's always interesting hearing from David. Seriously, it is the 200th anniversary of the one of the most remarkable explorations in American history, that of Lewis and Clark. I went out and purchased the PBS DVD of the Ken Burns Lewis and Clark documentary and enjoyed that very much. It's one heck of an adventure that at some point we're going to have to tell you about at length. We're hoping, too, that perhaps documentary filmmaker Ken Burns himself might make an appearance on this program. We're talking to his people. We'll see what happens. We would love to have him on this program because if you're familiar at all with the work he's done with the Civil War, with jazz, with baseball, the Brooklyn Bridge, Huey Long, Thomas Jefferson, the Lewis and Clark, it just goes on and on. The guy is an absolutely first-class documentarian. We'll see what happens. I'm Douglas Everett. This is Radio Parallax on KDVS 90.3 FM. Let's take a short break.